Dave, you're going to present scallops. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, with considerable help from Deidre. The scallop materials are behind tab 4. There are 10 documents, including 4 new or revised documents that were handed out yesterday and one that was just handed out during lunch. Yesterday's handouts include document number 1, which is a final scallop PDT meeting summary from their meeting October 25th. Document number 6 was also handed out just yesterday. That's the preliminary projections for the 2007 fishery. And documents 8 and 9 and the one handed out today, or the collection of them handed out today, are letters from the scallop industry for emergency or interim action to address potential overfishing in 2007. The scallop committee itself has not met since the last council meeting, so there are no committee motions to act on. However, the council needs to consider action to initiate an amendment. It would be number 13, to reactivate an industry-funded observer program. The council also needs to consider initiating a framework, which would be 19, to set management measures for 2008 and 2009. And finally, the council needs to consider whether to recommend that National Marine Fisheries Service take an interim action to prevent overfishing in 2007. Since there is not enough time for the council to initiate action itself prior to the start of the fishery in January. And I'm going to turn it over to Deidre to take us through these documents and guide the council discussion on the 3 issues.
Okay, thank you. Hopefully everyone has all the materials that they need. I think I really wasn't going to spend a lot of time going through the PET summary. I'll just highlight that all of the 3 major agenda issues before us today were touched and discussed at the last PDT meeting. It is the only meeting related to scallops we've had since the last council meeting. It was on October 25th. And out of this meeting, there were several other documents prepared that are also in your binder that we will go through in much more detail. The first one, as Dave pointed out already, the first real agenda item for today is a presentation on the final elephant trunk updated biomass estimate. And you heard a lot about this at the September council meeting already. The results were preliminary at that point. The PDT has had another meeting and has now prepared the final report. Just to remind everyone, there's no council action necessary. This is just a presentation for your benefit to keep you informed, and we'll go through that memo next. The PDT also spent a bunch of time starting to get ready for Framework 19 in terms of going through some of the preliminary projections. And you'll see the bottom of the first page of the meeting summary, there's a little bit of a description of what we're seeing from the preliminary projections. I'll just go through this in a little bit more detail if you turn the page to top of page 2. So far, it seems that the largest concentration of biomass on George's Bank is on the northern edge within closed area 2, as well as part of the original access area in closed area 1, which is now closed for habitat. The only area with good recruitment on George's Bank that was seen in the 2006 survey was a small area in the southern part of the channel. Primary concentrations of biomass for the Mid-Atlantic are within the Elephant Trunk area and portions of the Delmarva area. And the PDT also wanted to point out that small scallops were found in the Hudson Canyon area, something the PDT is definitely going to keep in mind in future years. So we went through some sort of, in general, discussions about the surveys in 2006 and what we're seeing with the resource. And then Dr. Devorah Hart, who is on the scallop PDT and also in the audience today, if there are any specific questions as we go through the scallop agenda today, she had updated the projections for 2007, and the PDT went through those at our meeting. And basically, the projections are suggesting that overfishing is not occurring for 2006, although pretty close. But for 2007, overfishing is projected to occur in 2007 based on the updated projections. They're showing around 0.26, which is above the 0.24 fishing mortality threshold for the overfishing definition. The PDT obviously discussed this at length at their meeting and in the end decided to put a memo together for your review, which was emailed out to everybody last week, and we are going to go into that a little bit more this afternoon. In terms of Amendment 11, just moving on in the meeting summary, the PDT is still analyzing Amendment 11. Again, that's the general category amendment. and we went through some of the needed analyses for that document. Again, kind of waiting for yesterday's decision about priorities, Amendment 11 analysis is moving forward. However, with a lot of these issues coming up, it is likely that some of that timeline could be pushed back or may have to be pushed back a few months. We're still working on that within the staff to see what makes the most sense, but I do have some timelines we can go through in some documents further on in the binder related to that. The PDT also went through a bunch of other issues. If you turn the page in the summary to page 3, related to other business. The only one I'm really going to note today, because it's on the agenda for the council discussion, is the discussion of an industry-funded observer program and the need for this council to initiate an action at this meeting. David Potter with the observer program did come to our PDT meeting and summarize the background on this issue. He's also available today if anyone has direct questions for him. Again, I have another document in the binder that goes through this in much more detail about the background of this issue and why we need to initiate the action. But in a nutshell, there has been an observer program in the scallop fishery for years, since 1999, and it has been funded from the industry through a set-aside program set up under the plan. And for years, it has been through a contract that NIMS has had with an observer provider. But in recent times, it became aware that there were some concerns having a contract type of issue. So we'll get into it. I don't want to kind of get distracted now, but the point is that in order to take care of this issue, the council is going to have to initiate an action today, and rather than take the time now, I'll go through that when we get to that agenda item. So in terms of the PDT meeting, that's actually all I wanted to go through, but if anyone has any questions as you thumb through it, please feel free to ask. Otherwise, I think we should just get into the elephant trunk discussion, which is document number 2 behind the binder. This is the final PDT memo approved by the PDT. Again, no council actions necessary. This is for your information and will be forwarded to the regional administrator. Just as a reminder, the first page of this memo summarizes basically why we're here and why we went through this. And a rulemaking procedure was adopted under Framework 18 that gave the regional administrator the authority to reduce the number of trips in the elephant trunk area if updated surveys suggested that the number of trips allocated originally under the framework was too high. So that's what the PDT has been doing. Over the last few months, we've had several meetings. And in general, if you turn the page, it's really just a figure of the area, but if you go on to page 3, kind of the main message is that there were 3 surveys conducted in the elephant trunk area, one by the Federal Dredge Survey, one by the Virginia Institute of Marine Science Dredge Survey, as well as a video survey by UMass Dartmouth. All 3 of these surveys, the underlined portion in the middle of page 3, is kind of the take-home message that the updated biomass estimates from these 3 surveys are very consistent, and none of them suggest a reduction in the number of trips that should be allocated in the elephant trunk area based on the defined thresholds. Now, I just want to take a minute to explain that, although it was summarized at the September Council meeting. You have to keep in mind that in order for a rulemaking procedure like this to be set up, very specific thresholds have to be defined, and they were. And so if you look at the table 1 above that, these would have to be the updated biomass numbers the PDT presents would have to hit these certain numbers in order to suggest an automatic reduction in trips. So those, if you keep those in mind and you turn the page, table 2 is actually the final results from the PDT. And the column you want to pay attention to is the one titled July Exploitable Biomass. And for all 3 different surveys, after the researchers had time to finalize their data and work together and come up with final results, if you look at all these different values for metric tons ranging from about 38,000 to 62,000 metric tons from the different surveys, all of them together, while there's some variance there, none of them actually got below that threshold, which from the earlier table is 34,000. So they were all projecting higher biomass than the threshold to suggest a reduction in trips. However, all of them are seeing less biomass than Framework 18 projected. So that is something to take note of, certainly. And in terms of the PDT's responsibility in this process and updating the biomass, this memo technically probably could have stopped after Table 2. And this would have been the information suggesting that no technical trigger would need to be met. However, the PDT discussed this for a very long time, and they do have some concerns that they wanted to communicate to this council and through this memo. And those sort of begin in the middle of page 5 and over onto page 6. And these are, I wouldn't call them caveats or anything like that, because the regulations are very clear in what's required to reduce the number of trips, but they are things to take note of. There's about 6 different things described over the next page that are either assumptions in the model that may be overestimating biomass or reasons that the PDT believes this council and the regional administrator should be precautionary with the biomass, particularly in the Elephant Trunk area. I'll go through them very quickly just so people have a little bit more information on the specifics that were discussed among the PDT and so you have a better understanding of the actual model. And the first thing that could be related to overestimating the biomass in the Elephant Trunk and in the model is related to growth. And the model uses a certain estimate for growth, and in recent times it seems to be working pretty well for Georges Bank, but in the Mid-Atlantic this value that's being used may actually be too high, and the PDT is going to look into using a lower number. And what that would do if the number's too high is it would overestimate the biomass, particularly in the Mid-Atlantic. So that is one source of potentially these numbers being higher than what is actually going on. The second issue the PDT wanted you to be aware of is something we're going to go into in more detail later this afternoon, is related to the overall scallop resource, not just in the Elephant Trunk area, but the estimates right now are showing that there's a high likelihood that overfishing will occur in 2007. So that is certainly something to keep in mind when thinking about the Elephant Trunk area. The third point on the bottom of the page is that all 3 surveys are conducted in the summer of 2006, and this area is slated to open in January, so the scallops will not have a full year to grow. So that was another point. The fourth point, if you turn the page, the PDT is pointing out, is related to basically that right now the TAC for this area is based on a certain distribution curve of scallops that are assumed to be caught with 4-inch gear, which is what is required. The PDT is recommending that perhaps down the road a more precautionary thing to do would be to add an additional cull size and not just scallops assumed to be caught with 4-inch gear, because as we know, smaller scallops get plugged up in the dredge and get caught. So while this wasn't in the estimate, it's something the PDT is going to look into that may bring this estimate down a bit. The fifth point, getting through these, the model also uses a specific shell height meat weight relationship, and that's based on data from scallops caught in July during the survey. And it is known that in July, scallops have better yield in terms of their meat weight to a given shell size. Therefore, if you just use the data from July, you may end up getting an overestimated number again. So the PDT is, and in this table, you actually can see we looked at October just as a comparison, and the biomass does go down when a different time is used. So again, this is just another source of probably an overestimate in the biomass that people need to be aware of. Lastly, the model assumes a 20% discard mortality rate. And while this is a reasonable estimate for scallops region-wide in areas like the Elephant Trunk, the PDT would like to point out that there may be a higher discard mortality rate for that area because the scallops are dense, especially in warmer months when the air and water temperatures are higher. So all of these factors together certainly point out that the model may be overestimating biomass, if anything. It's not underestimating it in the opinion of the PDT. So keep that in mind. Also, the PDT discussed some concerns that the industry has raised about the potential for derby fishing. They were listening to those ideas, and they're captured in the paragraph at the end of the memo. And the PDT recognizes that while there's no flexibility in the rulemaking procedure approved in Framework 18 to kind of make this decision based on anything but the triggers. The PDT does urge the industry to explore voluntary ways to promote responsible fishing practices, for example, spreading trips out, taking shorter tows, no deck loading, and not discarding viscera and scallop shells in the same place. So the take-home message from the memo is that technically the triggers were not met. So in the letter to the law, the number of trips shouldn't be reduced based on just the triggers set up in Framework 18. So technically, that's what this report is saying. However, as I just went through, the PDT does point out a handful of reasons why we're not, you know, this estimate's most likely overestimating biomass, and people really need to be aware of that. So if people have questions about the report, again, it's going to be submitted to the regional administrator, and because of the overall projections, I am going to go back to some of this stuff later this afternoon when we talk about the preliminary projections for 2007, if we want to revisit it, but I can pause here. But again, no motions necessary on this topic.
Any questions for Deirdre? Paul?
In other stocks, like, say, for instance, groundfish, there'll be a F of, say, the F is 0.3. That F is achieved with a 50% chance that the F is below 0.3 and a 50% chance it's above 0.3. And then we establish a target TAC based on 50% it's above, 50% it's below. So if, in fact, we want to find wiggle room with your biomass estimate to go to a lower biomass, can the council say I want a 90% surety instead of 50% surety of the number is above 20,000 pounds as opposed to it's 50-50 that it's above 34,000? What about we have a 90% chance it's above, say, whatever the number is that gives you three trips? Do you see what I'm saying? There's a number of ways you can use the scientific information. But is this a 50% accurate or 50% chance that it's above or below?
I'm pretty sure, and Devorah, please jump in if you want to add anything, that this isn't really done exactly the same way in terms of giving you an actual percentage. But what we have done in one of the later memos is kind of run these models for future years out, and what that'll show you is give you a sense of kind of more long-term what some of these things would mean. But in terms of an actual percentage assurance, I don't think it's done the same way as the stocks you're talking about.
Yeah. The comment on this, these are the expected values as the most likely value, but they're all well above that 34,000. So probably you put them all together, and I would guess there's a 90% chance that it's above on this stuff off the, but it's well bigger. So if you notice, these numbers are not close to the trigger. So especially when you add them all together, one survey has some uncertainties. When you have three of them, that makes it much less. So I would say that it's very likely that this is above that threshold.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, Deirdre, you may have said this. If you have, I apologize. And going through the material that you provided and listening to what you said, it would be helpful if you would make note of what the PDT concluded we would have for an expected fishing mortality rate in 2007 if we move forward as planned with the elephant trunk area. In other words, we don't reduce the number of trips.
You're jumping ahead a little bit, but in a memo later, the original under Framework 18, the target was to have fishing mortality in elephant trunk at 0.16. But the updated projections that Devorah has ran are actually showing that it's closer to an F of 0.22. Now, that's just for the resource in that area. Is that your question?
Yeah, that's my area, but that's my question. But I was also concerned about, well, I'm also wondering if the plant development team had anything to say regarding the impact What would be the PDT's conclusion regarding the fishing mortality region-wide relative to whether we had suddenly crossed that overfishing threshold, and to what extent would we have crossed it? How bad would we be projected?
Yep, that's exactly what document number 6 goes through. Rather than jump ahead, I'll quickly answer and probably go into it in a lot more detail next. But under status quo, leaving everything the same, 5 trips, for example, in Elephant Trunk area, based on the updated information, the overall F would be 0.26 for the overall resource that I mentioned before, rather than the threshold of 0.24. So it's over that threshold for overfishing.
Okay, thank you. I won't jump any further ahead. However, clearly the plan development team is acknowledging that the way the plan is written now, in light of the projections for biomass, nothing can be done to respond to the concerns that you've outlined, plan development team concerns that you've outlined regarding the need for us to be much more precautionary than we have been up to this point in time, correct? In other words, you're saying that there's a fire burning and it may become an inferno, but as it stands right now, we just have to stand by and watch it burn.
Well, I won't call it an inferno. I wouldn't want to do that. But, yes, in the normal council process for 2007, our normal rulemaking, we couldn't do anything, but we could either have the council request that the agency consider interim action, or we could take this information under advisement for Framework 19 and make some pretty serious decisions with those measures for fishing years 08 and 09. But again, that's all into the next memo that we're going to get to soon.
Yeah, and isn't it true you mentioned the 0.26 as opposed to 0.24, but the council has voted in the past that we want to manage to 0.20. So we went from 0.20 to a projected 0.26, which is like, what, 30% higher than what we were supposedly managing at. So it's pretty significant change.
0.20 is the target. Certainly that's what we should be striving for.
Anyone else on the council? Okay. Dave, you have another item for us to discuss? Or D?
Yep, moving right along, the next agenda item under scallops is related to the need to initiate an observer coverage amendment. And I'll just kind of get ahead that documents number 3, number 4, and number 5 are all related to this subject. And I'll run through them and really... the first one is a memo from Paul Howard to the council that was mailed out to you. And in general, this is just trying to very quickly explain what we're doing here. And I think this action, I'm going to take a little bit of time to go through some of the background because, at least for me, it came up a little unexpected and not being completely involved in some of the work that the agency's been doing related to this. It took me a little bit to catch up, so I'm going to just take a little bit of time to go through this memo so everyone understands exactly what it is we would be initiating today. And again, because a lot of this work was done through an emergency action, it was a very internal process, so if I'm mischaracterizing anything, please, agency staff, jump in. But in general, as I explained before, there has been an observer coverage program that is funded through the industry through a set-aside program in the scallop fishery since 1999. About 1% of the scallop tack for access areas and 1% of the open area days are deducted before allocations are made to the rest of the fishery to help fund the program. Vessels required to carry an observer are authorized to land more than the possession limit from trips in the access areas, and in open areas, vessels are charged at a reduced amount to help compensate for the cost of the coverage. Now, this program has gone on for several years this way. Observers were deployed through a contractual arrangement that I explained before through June of 2004. At that time, this arrangement was not renewed from the agency because of unresolved issues concerning the use of a contract to administer the industry-funded observer program. Specifically, there was concern that the previous arrangement conflicted with augmentation of appropriations policy and law. So without getting into the details, there's a lot of issues that went on, but it was advised that it looked too much like a contract, that NIMS shouldn't run the program this way. So without this arrangement not being extended, there was no mechanism to actually put the observers on the vessels and have the vessels pay for the observers. So in its absence, NIMS ended up funding observers on scallop vessels directly. So for about a year and a half, through part of 2004 and all of 2005, all of the observers on scallop vessels were actually funded through the observer program rather than the set-aside. Subsequent plans have always still had the set-aside, but it just actually wasn't used. All through that time, NIMS explored different ways that they could solve this primarily administrative problem that they were having with the program, but it ended up really to no avail, all their different attempts. So in February 2006, when the center received their budget for funding, it became obvious that it was not sufficient to support the coverage that they would need that they had been funding for the last year and a half. So in order to reconcile this issue, NIMS ended up putting an emergency action together to sort of reactivate the observer coverage program as it was in years previous, where the industry would fund observers. But this time, rather than a contract, they had to make it very clear that it was a non-contractual agreement and a lot more responsibility instead of NIMS having the vessels call NIMS and NIMS organizing the observer, to meet the vessel and so forth. The vessel now directly contacts the observer provider. And anyone can become an observer provider. It's voluntary, so there isn't just one provider. There could be several. So to make a long story short, this emergency action went into place in June of 2006. It's an emergency action, so it has 6 months. Even if it's reactivated, that would give us another 6 months, but after that point, that would just bring us through to June 2007, and again, we would be left at the same place with no mechanism to fund observers, and it doesn't seem, based on the report yesterday, that the budget is going to increase out of nowhere for the observer program. So in order for this mechanism to continue and there to be a way to fund observers through the industry on scallop vessels, we need to initiate an amendment to do this rather than under the emergency actions. So we have, on our staff, discussed this in detail with staff at NIMS. It seems that an amendment would be required because it is not a frameworkable item in our plan. But the part that is a little different is that actually no NEPA document is required. Paul explained yesterday that we'd get a categorical exclusion, but I believe I've actually discussed this with some of the staff over at the NEPA office, that actually no NEPA document is required at all, so we wouldn't even get a categorical exclusion. It wouldn't be required. It's actually no analysis is going to be required because, and that's the same, and again, this is all prefaced on the point that if it stays exactly the same as what was done in the emergency action, we will not have to do any analysis for this document because it's been done already in earlier NEPA documents under the scallop FMP. Now, this is all based, again, that we're going to start this amendment at this council meeting. We could bring it back to you in February. We'll have a public hearing at the February council meeting and pick final measures for this action. The only other documents related to this subject, document number 4 is really just a copy of the emergency regulations. I'm not going to go through that at all. It's just really there for your reference. And the other document I started putting together when this issue came up to give you a sense of the different measures that would specifically have to be included in this action, and I'll take a little time to go through that with you, but I do want to point out the important thing here is that we can do this. It's something that is important and necessary. There are issues that people have brought up about the current program, things that they would like to improve, for example. Dave Potter mentioned one to the PDT at our last meeting, and I've gotten phone calls from the industry with other ideas. There are ways that the current program could be improved. The bind that we're in is that if we go to add those types of alternatives to this action, we will run the risk of then having to do analysis and not being able to bring this document back to you in February. And if that's the case, then this most likely then would not be in place in time for the access areas in 2007, which is a serious concern. So when I go through the document number 5 to give you a better sense of what would need to be included in this action, just keep in mind that the more we consider adding to it, while it could make it better, could run the risk of it not being in place in time for the fishery. So before I do that, does anyone have any questions about what we're doing? Or I can just start running through document number 5. This looks very long, but that's really because I've pasted a lot of the actual regulatory text in here, and that really isn't the important part. So it actually won't take very long to get through it all. I just wanted you to have some information so you had a sense of what type of action we were initiating today. So let's just start. If you turn the page onto page 1, again, the format of this looks a lot like an environmental assessment or typical documents through the council, because originally we thought we were going to have to do that. So most likely when you see this document again in February, it will not look so NEPA-like. The background and purpose was essentially the memo that I already described to you. Purpose and need, again, the goals and objectives, this was all because we thought we were going to have to do that. But again, it's going to be a much more abbreviated document now, provided we don't change too much. Just want to explain the no action starts on the bottom of page 2. The important part there basically is that if nothing's done in this amendment, there's no way to have a mechanism to fund the observers through the industry, and that's a pretty big risk. So that's explained under the no action. The agency can only do 2 emergency actions related to this topic, so we definitely have a timeline that we're under. The next section, VMS notification requirements. This is actually, most of this is the old, what would be the old observer program. I left it in here so you could have a better understanding of what the original observer coverage program included, but these measures would all be suspended and replaced with basically what we're doing in this amendment. So I left it in here, again, just for your reference. The important part here is that before, vessels would contact NMFS several times through VMS, and then NMFS would in turn contact the observer provider and organize them getting onto the vessels. The big change is that now the vessels would be contacting the observer providers directly. So we don't have to spend any time on that section. It's just sort of the part that's going to be replaced. If you turn the page, the real new stuff begins in section 3.3.2 on the bottom of page 4. And this is sort of the nuts and bolts of the actual observer program and how it's different. And really, it spreads over in the next 6 pages, if you can believe it. This is all regulation that I took right out of the regulations. I'm not going to go through these today, but just so you, as you flip through them, you can get a sense that it's a very detailed program, that all of the responsibilities of being an observer service provider are in here. All of the new responsibilities for vessels are in here. All of the responsibilities of NMFS are described in here. But in general, they're pretty general things, you know, making sure that an observer provider has insurance and is an actual organization structure and gets through the application and evaluation program the way it should be. Provides transportation and lodging for observers. It's all very detailed and all laid out here, luckily, for us already. There is still an observer training requirement, and NMFS still provides training for observers. It's one way that NMFS is able to maintain some control over the data quality, so training is still done at the observer office, from what I understand. And on page 9, I just want to point out one interesting part about the program, another way that NMFS is able to maintain some quality control, because that's certainly an important issue, is that they do have the ability still, NMFS, that is, to remove an observer service provider and decertify them. So if it's found that one company is, you know, not keeping up to data standards and so forth, it can be decertified. And again, if you just keep flipping, there's more details about the different standards. So this document, technically, if we wanted to implement exactly what was done in the emergency action, it would stop in the middle of page 11. We would forward that, consider it, have a public hearing about it, and submit it, and that would be that. As I explained before, there are some issues that have come up, and we discussed them at our last PDT meeting about ways to improve this program. I'm not completely recommending that we include them because, as I explained, it could run the risk of additional analysis and so forth, but I wanted you to be aware of them. There are some concerns that the current program is not exactly favorable for smaller vessels. The cost that they get and the extra possession limits that they get are not really covering the cost that they are bearing for observers. And this is a concern that Dave Potter explained to the PDT that he's been getting a lot of phone calls about from smaller vessels and urging the council to consider doing something about that. So that was one suggested idea. Talking between staff, if you turn the page, we had sort of one solution at this point. Rather than running the risk of slowing this action down, we could add Section 3.5, which would be additional measures that could be implemented through a framework. So while we couldn't maybe address that exact issue right now, we could in this amendment add a section to allow something like that to be frameworkable. And there's three actions for scallops next year, so there probably will be opportunity to get something like that in. So that was just sort of one suggestion. And, again, we are going to have a scallop committee meeting before the February council meeting where we can iron out some of these details before we bring it back in February. But in a nutshell, that this is what would be required of us to kind of do exactly what was done in the emergency action in time for when the access areas opened in 2007.
Dave, did you want to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. Part of the inequity for the small boats spills over into data quality. And what happens is the small vessel paying the cost of the observer, if he can't take advantage of the days at sea set aside, or he can't take advantage of the 400 pounds because he can't hit the 18,000 pound anyway, he ends up paying out of pocket. So what's happening is these smaller vessels are taking the observer out for a couple of days, doing a couple of drags, coming back in, dropping them off, fueling up, icing up, and then going out and making a trip. So what we're seeing with the observers covering is not the typical trip. So we're getting some biased information from that sector of the fleet because of the inequities in terms of their payback for the set-aside. That's our concern in terms of data quality. Obviously, we hear the concerns over the inequities in it, but what it really rolls down to is the data that we're getting from these may not be representative of that fleet sector. So I just want to be clear on that. Additionally, I've given Deidre some edits on some of the rules and regulations that you have there. They're minor, but there will be some minor editing and changes made to that before it's final. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Anyone else? Sir.
James Fletcher, United National Fishermen Association. I would ask if this is going to be industry funded, does this open the door for industry to negotiate what the observers are paid? On these smaller boats, if they didn't have to pay the observer as much, it then may be economically feasible. But we've had some cases where the observers, especially in the open areas, have made way far more money per day than the crews. So does this open the way? The question is, does this open the way to negotiate observer compensation? Thank you.
I don't have a response for that.
I'll just try to jump in. I think the answer would be no. On page 6, and I haven't gone through these line by line, but I'm pretty sure in paragraph number 5, James, there is a paragraph explaining that the scallop vessel shall be responsible for paying the cost of the observer and that the observer service later on in that paragraph are responsible for setting the daily rate for the observer coverage on a vessel. And then it goes on to say that NIMS shall determine the reduced days at sea accrual rate and amount of additional pounds and so forth. So it's pretty clear in there who's responsible for what, and I wouldn't think that seems pretty clear from that.
Dave?
David Frula, Fisheries Survival Fund. We appreciate the council moving on this and the service moving on this. Historically, the scallop fleet is the one who's had to pay for its observers, and that seems to be the way forward. One thing I would suggest, and I like that, I think it's section 3.5, is to make the framework authority as broad as you can here in terms of, and maybe even broader than it is right now, because what's happening is you're starting to set up a system of private contract between the vessels and the observer company, and you can get some level of compensation through the plan for vessels. I'm encouraging the fleet to do a lot of work in terms of maybe figuring out alternative service providers, ways to spread the cost. There may be a lot of creative things that can be done privately here, and it may or may not require a little bit of governmental action to boost it along. So I can't sit here today and tell you what it's going to be, but if it's something that we can accomplish through a framework that solves some of these problems, I'd appreciate it, and I think the fleet would too. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Lane, Fleet Fisheries. We sent one of our boats down to try and do a Hudson Canyon makeup trip, and the observer got over half of the gross stock of the trip, so that didn't work out well.
In the back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gib Brogan with Oceana. I'd just like to point out that there's going to be an opportunity here since we're doing an observer amendment with the scallop fishery. The timing of the SBRM being finished up is going to happen right about the same time, and contained in the SBRM is information about how many observers we need for the scallop fishery. So it seems to be a natural coincidence that these two things are happening, and this amendment should include a discussion of the information that's in the SBRM, a discussion of what should be required for observers to get good information and achieve that 30% CV that's discussed in the SBRM. Thanks.
Paul. Anyone else in the audience? Harriet.
I do want to say that the payment to the observer program, I know the person who does the work on the boat doesn't exactly get that money, but I know a case just this week. It is more than the crew was making. That is problematic. So I think that in the future, if the vessels are going to have more responsibility, she's gone through it quickly here today. And with responsibility, there's insurance liability. There's a lot of things. I think these have to understand the boat taking more liabilities. Where's the money going to come from? You know, and the crew is looking at this. I mean, you talk about they get something in the future, but not particularly maybe somebody on that trip is going to benefit from that accrued 2 days or whatever that you're going to get in the future for taking that observer. So it's today's money out, tomorrow's money a promise. And they are getting more than the crew member is taking home. I want to make that point. Thank you.
Just in terms of yesterday's priorities, we already approved Framework 19 for 2007. So at any point at any council meeting, the council can give direction to the committee to consider addressing differential counting for scallops for the observer program in Framework 19, because we've already voted to do it.
Dr. Pierce.
If you're ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman, I will make it. Clearly, observer coverage is critical. The reason why it's critical, for the reasons why, have been very clearly identified in one of our handouts, number four in the Federal Register announcement. Actually, it's the third column, the second paragraph down. I won't read it all, but that makes the point. It is necessary. and we need to do everything possible to keep that observer coverage. Therefore, I would move that the council initiate Amendment 13 to the Atlantic Sea Scallop FMP to reactivate the industry-funded observer program for the scallop fishery, period. I continue. The program will include improvements identified by the plan development team, provided those improvements do not delay the amendment process. And then lastly, if a delay is anticipated, additional measures will be added to the list of frameworkable items.
Is there a second? Seconded by Rip Cunningham. Discussion on the motion. Deirdre, just to be clear, the plan is to return to the council, did you say, in February with this for a final action? Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, go back to the audience. David?
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. We generally support the motion. I would encourage you to think about providing some framework authority, regardless of whether you can fix the one issue that's in the amendment document. Because, like I said, I think there's probably other things that we can do that may increase the pool of observers or, you know, find ways to make this work better. Nobody's had a chance to think about it yet and really get into it. And if there's some framework authority that other ideas can be included, not just this one, you would give yourself more latitude in Framework 19 or whatever the other frameworks are down the road. So if you can just include framework authority general and not as a condition, that would be great. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. Pat?
Just clarification. I guess I'm not sure what the last sentence means in the motion, whether that is what David's referring to or something else.
Yeah, I tried to reflect the part of the draft Amendment 13 described by Deidre, that's 3.5. I tried to include that in the language, that is, of the motion. That is, additional measures that can be implemented through a framework adjustment. It's unclear to me whether this motion would actually address the specific concerns addressed by David. I suspect that they would. But again, I can't give you a definitive on that, Pat.
I think one of the issues is we can't define what other issues we may want to make frameworkable, but you can't necessarily say everything's frameworkable, right? You have to actually list it. So, anyone else on the council?
If I could just also to add as a word of caution, which I think is what you were getting to, is that, you know, I think it's good to make it as broad as we can, but at the same time, if anything, we need to be a little specific because in order for us to not have to write a NEPA document, we have to know exactly what's in the, you know, in our document. And it's been pretty clear if NIMS wants to comment that if it's exactly like it was in the emergency action, no analysis is needed. We can get this definitely done in February and in place and time for the fishery. It starts to get gray when you start talking about frameworkable items and what type of analysis would maybe have to be required to add that in. So just as a word of caution as we start getting those more specific items listed.
Jim Audley.
Yeah, I would think the last sentence should read that adjustments in the observer program will be added to the list of framework workable items. It's a friendly suggestion.
David?
I'm sorry, would you give... Say that again, Jim.
I would think that the last sentence would read that adjustments in the observer program would be added to the list of frameworkable items. That would be the last sentence in your motion.
So an add-on sentence, add that to what that's already up there.
I would replace your last sentence with that sentence.
Well, I guess that that might change. I'm not objecting to that particular language as an add-on, but my specific intent with the last part of that motion was to address the issues, you know, the additional measures that were identified in Section 3.5.
You mean 3.5.1?
Yes, 3.5.1. And that's the differential possession limit and the DSC calculation by scarlet permit type.
So do you want to reference that specifically? I think the concern is that the last sentence of the motion that you offered is so open-ended that when we come back in February to take final action, it may delay or otherwise slow down the process.
All right. Well, in order to move it forward, I would accept the suggestion made by Jim to substitute that sentence for my last sentence.
Okay.
And that's consistent with your guidance, Mr. Chairman.
Second or agree?
Yes.
Okay. Jim Salisbury.
Question for the maker of the motion. Deirdre's comments are basically that if this is done as exactly reflecting the emergency rule, then it can go through relatively quickly. If not, if we include the improvements identified by the PDT, it may, not necessarily will, but may take longer. Your motion then is saying, if I understand it correctly, that even though it takes longer, it may take longer, it's worth having those other points in it, but... In if you find out that it is going to take longer at some point, then you add on the additional point. Is that correct? I mean, it seems to me we're walking a line here between just trying to do it simply and quickly or maybe taking longer, and you're saying that, well, if necessary, we will go with the longer version if we have to because we want those other things in it, and if it does take longer, then we'll add this third portion.
No, that's not the case. The delay would not be acceptable to me. This motion indicates that if indeed we do determine after further thought, further evaluation, that there is a delay, then we would not add those additional measures. The delay is inappropriate for the reasons identified again in that Federal Register announcement describing the importance of the program itself. So if indeed there is no delay, then fine, put those improvements in. Otherwise, don't do it.
Anyone else? Danny, I saw your hand up in the back. Did you want to comment?
Thank you. I think this motion covers the intent of people's of the industry, which is we do agree that this needs to be done quickly so it can be placed for June of 2007. We also know that there's going to be Framework 19 taking place, which will be in place for March of 2008. It's clear that there could be improvements to this. We've all discussed them. And as long as we don't change the major structure of what the Observer Program is doing, i.e. the CV evaluations, i.e. that there's 1% set aside, there may be ways for us to handle the allocation of that amongst the fleet in a manner that will get more acceptance and better economic use out of it, including methods of, you know, as Dave, whether we pool that, we do as an industry-funded 1% that is split. One of the goals of the boats would be that actually all the boats pay a little bit, and then you get the observers for free, which is technically possible within the 1% and the CV and all that. We can't do it for this amendment. We can't do it today. But as long as we have the ability to discuss it in Framework 19, we might be able to improve the system for 2008. And as long as that's kind of the intent of this motion, I think we love it. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. Any further discussion before I call the question? All those in favor of the perfected motion, please raise your hand. Yeah, 16 in favor. Okay, motion passes. Why don't we, we're just about at the 90-minute mark. Why don't we take a quick break before we get into the next issue? 10-minute break.
To occur. Now, there are several factors. The PDT, of course, you know, looking backwards, says, well, why were our projections low? What happened here? The next paragraph tries to illustrate some of the reasons that the PDT thinks the biomass that currently there's an overestimation, what could have contributed to this overestimation in biomass and underestimation of mortality. So we had a long discussion about this. And a lot of it comes down to what we know about recruitment. And the model uses an average recruitment each year, assuming that we're going to get average recruitment. Now, you probably recall that from presentations you've heard over the last few years that recruitment on Georges Bank has actually been very poor for the last 2 years and has only been just around average for the Mid-Atlantic. So these would definitely be a reason that the biomass could be overestimated, due to this below-average recruitment for several years in a row. Additionally, looking back, the PDT kind of looks at what was implemented under Framework 18, and it is possible that 20,000 open area days at sea may not have been precautionary enough. So together with this issue related to recruitment, the third issue that the PDT discussed is that there were certain assumptions made about general category effort. And while the PDT was aware that general category effort was increasing at the time, and again, keep in mind when Framework 18 was developed, it was 2004. So there was an understanding that there were trends and increases in that level of, in that sector of the fishery, but perhaps those assumptions were not high enough for the actual effort that then occurred in 2005 and part of 2006 that are now in this updated model. And again, I already went through this in detail before, but the issue related to growth and what the model uses for growth is definitely a big factor that could be overestimating this biomass. So all these things together, the PDT discussed that there certainly are some reasons why there could be some overestimating in some of the biomass projections that have come out recently. So turning the page. The PDT is obviously concerned that overfishing is now projected to occur for 2007, so we then discussed some potential strategies and ways that could be curtailed. The PDT discussed several alternatives at the meeting and over the phone and emails after that, and basically what this memo is trying to do is provide you with some information about if the council wants to consider doing something about overfishing, what would have to be done in 2007 to prevent overfishing? They've put three alternatives. We've put three alternatives together. The first alternative would basically be a combination of reducing trips in the elephant trunk area as well as reducing trips in the open area. The second alternative would be just related to reducing trips in the elephant trunk area, and that would be from an equivalent of about 5 trips for full-time permit owners to about 3 trips. And again, you have to keep in mind that when trips are reduced for the elephant trunk area, that is all, you know, for all sectors of the fishery. So full-time would go from 5 to 4, for example. Occasionals would go down. And the overall number of trips for the general category fishery would also come down by a similar equivalent amount. So you'll see in that paragraph a description of what the different alternatives are more specifically. The third alternative is a little different in that it also reduces the number of trips in the elephant trunk area as well as in the open area, but it's kind of more focused on actually getting at that target that Paul was discussing before, that 0.2 fishing mortality target. So that alternative works backwards in a sense that it tries to meet that 0.2 target and then spits out what certain measures would be needed to reach that. So I'm going to just go through this table a little bit to make sure everyone understands it. And this gets to it, what Dave Pierce was asking before. It gives you a sense of where we are with fishing mortality, projected catch, and biomass if we stay under status quo for 2007, or alternatively, if we go with one of these different alternatives for 2007. The first column explains that fishing mortality overall would be at 0.26. Again, that is over the overfishing threshold. I just also illustrated for the elephant trunk area as well, since so many of these measures are related to that area. You'll see that the fishing mortality there would be 0.22 under overfishing, under status quo. Projected landings under status quo are about 70 million, and the biomass under a status quo is about 391 million. Now, again, each of the alternatives, as you would expect, fishing mortality rates would come down at different levels depending on which strategy you go with. Landings, of course, would also come down, and biomass would go up. So, in general, you see that each of the alternatives bring overall fishing mortality below the overfishing threshold, which is obviously the point. Alternative 3 brings you that much further down to the actual target of 0.2. That's the main difference there. So we did do a type of risk analysis, a little bit of what Paul was getting to before. So we looked at all these different alternatives, and Devorah actually ran them into the future. So if you turn the page onto page 3, this next table has a lot of numbers, and those are just there if you really want to get into the details, but the figure probably illustrates the point in a similar way. And basically what this is telling you is that if something's done in 2007, if you look at the figure, this is the projected landings. Under the status quo is the solid line. Projected landings is somewhere up near 32,000 metric tons or 70 million pounds. So if we stay the course, that's around where the model is estimating that will be. Each of the different alternatives has a dashed line. You can see the different ones. The first year, they're pretty different, but then over time, the important thing here is that for future years, 2008 and beyond, the model forces the fishery to be at 0.2. That's our target. This is where we would like to be. So you have to keep in mind that's why all these curves are growing and biomass is increasing and landings are increasing over time, because we have that target. We're meeting that target every year. That would be great if we can do that. So you'll see the difference in landings is pretty big. Obviously, alternative 3 is the most restrictive. That's reducing days in the elephant trunk area as well as the open area, and that would bring projected landings down to about 56 million, and the other alternatives are somewhere in between. So the take-home message kind of from all of this, if you turn the page onto the back, is that something can be done in 2007 to prevent overfishing. It would require some reductions in days at sea and landings, or we can wait until 2008 and address it then, but the reduction in days and landings will be more severe, and that's what that paragraph is trying to explain. I'll just give you an example with some numbers. So the first paragraph is explaining that under the status quo, there's a 38% reduction in days at sea when you go from 2007 to 2008 because of those cuts that would be necessary in 2008 if nothing's done in 2007. When you compare that to Alternative 1, for example, there's also going to be necessary cuts, but the reduction in days is something closer to about 23% difference. If you go back to those tables, you can kind of pull out all sorts of different things. But in general, as you would expect, you know, you take some cut now, and the cuts will be less down the road. Let's see what else I wanted to point out. Again, the PDT wants to stress that these models, because of all those assumptions and issues that I've already gone through, if anything, are overestimating biomass. So people shouldn't be uncomfortable that these are underestimates at all or anything like that. If anything, it's overestimating that. So keep that in mind. The next paragraph there in the middle is sort of where everything comes together. And, of course, other combinations could be considered. These are just some alternatives the PDT put together to give you a frame of reference and some examples. While the projections do not suggest a large level of overfishing, people may be saying 0.26 is really not that far above 0.24. The PDT does support, while that doesn't seem like a lot, it does support consideration of reducing effort because, again, if anything, the model is overestimating biomass. And the PDT also wants to point out that reductions in 2007 at this point would not require large sacrifices from the industry overall. So that is another important point. And to help reduce that boom and bust situation that the scallop fishery does seem to be facing. At the end of that paragraph, I put a few values of landings from previous years to give you a better sense, frame of reference of where landings have been. And in 2003, it was somewhere around 57 million. 2004, it was about 65 million. And again, in 2005, about 55 million. And of course, 2006 is not over yet. Right now, it's at about 42 million, but should somewhere, you know, be somewhere in the 50s for the full year. So this is where we've been the last few years. Framework 18, it should be noted, projected that landings for 2006, where we are right now, were 70 million, and we are going to be well below that. So there are reasons for that, and I went through some of them the PDT thinks could be going on with that. So these are things to keep in mind that where the fishery has been going up and down and what's projected for 2007. So the end of this memo really is where the PDT stops, and it's up to the council. So now what? This is the information from the PDT. It's the best available science, the most up-to-date information, and now it's kind of up to you to decide what to do with this information. Just to remind you, the Elephant Trunk area opens in January of 2007. We already went through the Elephant Trunk memo, where technically none of those triggers were met to reduce the number of trips. And while the PDT highlighted a handful of reasons to be precautionary, keep in mind that technically none of those triggers were actually met for that procedure. So at the end, the PDT is kind of putting this in front of the council as sort of two options in front of you. The council could consider this information from the PDT and discuss if it warrants requesting the service to consider interim action to prevent overfishing in 2007, or the council also could wait to address overfishing in Framework 19 and set appropriate management measures for the following two fishing years to prevent and address overfishing at that point. Just to point out, again, as what came up yesterday under other species, even if this is an official announcement to the council, again, there is within 1 year to address overfishing, and Framework 19 would be submitted to the service within a year from now. So that's really all from the PDT. Again, it's just an updated information. Again, you have some correspondence here. We had a lot of industry at our PDT meeting, and they have been contacting me and are, of course, on top of this issue and have submitted some input here for you to consider. But the PDT just wanted you to be aware of this, and that's all.
Thank you, Deirdre. It seems as if we have really two discussions, at least one and potentially a second, have a strong feeling there's a second discussion to be had. The first thing is, yesterday we, in our priorities, put scallops above the line with respect to Framework 19. We actually need a motion to initiate that framework so that we can address the 2008 and 2009 specification. So if someone would like to make that motion. Jim Odlin.
I'd like to make a motion that we initiate Framework 19 in the Scallop Plan to do the 2008 and 2009 adjustments.
Is there a second? Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Any discussion on that? Okay. All right, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Unanimous. Okay, the second issue was the discussion about an interim action, whether or not the council wants to request that an interim action be taken to address some of these issues that have been outlined in the several memos that Dee's gone over, and certainly we have a lot of public input on that issue as well. So if there's anyone at the council that would like to make a motion to that effect or have a discussion about it. David?
I'd like to ask a question first, maybe, of Dieter. On these alternatives that you presented here, alternative one and alternative two, the F rates are pretty close to the same. It appears on the surface of it that one elephant trunk area equals, with 10 fewer days in the open access area, equals three elephant trunk area trips. In other words, 10 open access days equal one elephant trunk area. But what I want to know is, does that spread the pain evenly amongst the user groups? I mean, in other words, has everybody got access to the elephant trunk, or is this only going to take, by going, say, from four to three, does that only put the onus of the loss on one group of scholar permit holders versus all scholar permit holders?
That's a good question. Alternative two would actually, I guess if you want to word it that way, put the onerous or price on all the sectors, including the general category sector. This one would reduce trips in the elephant trunk area only, and it would be a similar reduction for each permit category. Alternative one and alternative three would sort of do it, but not exactly to the same degree. They would have a similar cut in terms of the elephant trunk access, but then anything that is related to reducing effort in the open areas, that would only be for the existing limited access fleet, because we have no mechanism or overall control of the general category fleet in open areas. It's just a possession limit, so there's nothing really that we could do for the open areas for that sector of the fleet.
Okay, thank you. And then I'd like to ask the service a question, if I might. Basically, the black smoke or white smoke question. If we ask you to take interim action, or John said earlier this morning, are we going to get a red flag, yellow flag, checkered flag? Don't want to spend a lot of time making a motion for something that isn't going to happen.
Checkered flag. I don't even know what that means, so I hope you don't. I'm waiting to hear the discussion. I think you need to lay out. I heard what the PDT put forward for the council's benefit. On its face, the difference between the issue here is not whether or not action should be taken, but whether or not action needs to be taken immediately, or whether it should be done through the regular council process. And on its face, the difference between the 0.24 and the 0.26 doesn't indicate a need to take immediate action. That's something that, in my opinion, could go through the council process. And so, obviously, the industry and the PDT thinks there's some extenuating circumstances or additional information, I should say, is perhaps more compelling than the fishing mortality rate part of the argument. And I think it deserves some council discussion on whether or not you're feeling compelled by the arguments. I don't have a red flag or a green flag to raise right now.
White flag would be nice. Deirdre, I just have a question. I'm back in your document number 6, the last one we just went over on page 2. In the text, you just describe alternative 2, but then in the table for alternative 2, it says 3 ETA trips plus no open area days at sea. You mean no reduction in open area days at sea. Okay, I just want to make sure that people that are only looking at the table and not the text understand that it means no reduction in open
area. I thought everyone read all the text. Yes, that's 0 open area reduction or no reduction. That's right.
Okay, Paul.
I was going to say, because the council had such great discussion about the uncertainties in scallops and a new management scheme with rotational area management, you went to 0.20 as your threshold. You wanted to make sure you get it right. And it finds out now that even using 0.20, we've got an error of 34%, 35%. We're not there at 0.20. So we shouldn't be saying, well, it's really 0.24. We're managing to 0.20 and have a 34% error. So, you know, can we allow that to go on another year? That's a considerable error in the plan.
Yeah, I think it's important that we are clear on this point. The difference between the 0.24 and the 0.26 is the indication that there might be overfishing. So that's a little bit different than the goals of the plan and than the issue with respect to the goals of the plan. The fact that the 0.2 wasn't achieved through the management program still isn't an indication that you need some kind of immediate action. It's an indication that both the PDT need to be more precautionary in their projections, and the council needs to be more precautionary in addressing the information from the PDT when they decide on the management measures for 2008 and 2009. So I just want to make sure that we've got the right arguments on the table in the discussion.
For those on the council that are inclined to pursue an interim action or recommendation for interim action, basically what we're hearing is we need to build a case, a supportive case, that backs up our request for that. So some of those points are outlined in the memos that Dee has gone over. I'm sure there's other reasons or rationales that individuals could come up with if they're inclined to support interim action. Anyone else on the council? Jim?
Yeah, I'll make a motion that the council request National Marine Fisheries Service to take interim action in the scallop fisheries and implement alternative number 2 as described in the PDT document.
Is there a second? Terry Stockwell. Discussion? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, just a clarification, but it's unclear to me how alternative number 2 with the 3 ETA trips affects the general category, limited access. I'm reflecting on the suggestions made by the survival, actually made by the Fisheries Survival Fund specifically, where they say that if we do decide to go with the alternative number 2 to respond to their specific concerns and other concerns expressed by the PDT relative to the status of the elephant trunk area, that we should also have corresponding reductions in part-time, occasional, and general category permit holder trips. So could I have that clarified? The plan development team and its alternative number 2, the 3 ETA trips, how does that alternative impact the part-time, occasional, and general category permit holders?
In the middle of the paragraph above Table 1, David, you'll see there's a sentence, in addition, another option, alternative 2, could reduce the number of elephant trunks. That would be 3 for the full-time limited access vessels. And then in parentheses, it explains general categories would be reduced to 865. And just for reference, right now they're allocated under status quo 1,360. So it would be for the general category fleet, it would be reduced from that number to 865. I don't have in that paragraph what that means for occasional and part-time. It could be in that letter you were just referencing, but it would come down in a similar fashion down to one trip perhaps for the part-time and occasional, but I'll look in the regulations if you want. But it comes down in a similar way by two-thirds.
Okay, you don't have to get into the details. I'm satisfied that the alternative does indeed address those other permit holders that were identified by the Survival Fund.
Anyone else on the council? Rip and then David.
Thank you. I wanted to sort of make a comment based on what Pat had said. I mean, I certainly feel compelled that we should be taking some action. I think the concept of building the case, as John indicated, maybe is a little bit more problematic. But certainly there are not a great number of instances where the industry is coming to us and asking us to be more precautionary. So I think that should certainly play into how we work towards getting this done. I'm also, and there hasn't been any discussion, and maybe it's more problematic of building the case for it, but in the industry's requests, there have been requests to change the starting date of access into the elephant trunk area. I'm inclined to listen to that, but I would like to know if there's any other council thoughts on that.
David?
Yeah, I think there are a number of people here who think we should take some action, and therefore we've got to build a case. I kind of like to get some debate on all the alternatives. I certainly applaud Jim for putting a motion on the floor to get this started. And I'll reference the second paragraph on page 4, that the opening sentence from in that paragraph that says, other combinations could be considered to reduce fishing pressure, but the PDT believes a combination of reduced trips for the elephant trunk and open area days at sea would be the most effective and straightforward approach. Alternative 2 does not reduce any of the open area days at sea. At least for the sake of discussion, I would make a motion to substitute Alternative 3 for Alternative 2. And if I get a second, I'll offer a rationale.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion on the motion to substitute.
Okay, my rationale is that that's the one that gets us to the target F that we have set for ourselves. And to my way of thinking, kind of spreads the pain around a bigger area. One of the rationales I always use for reducing people's ability to make a living is that everybody's ox gets gored. Like I said, I think that this alternative does it and gets us what we're supposed to be doing. So if we're going to take action, we certainly ought to reach our target. That's my rationale.
Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I seconded this motion is I found it extraordinary that industry came forward to us asking for precautionary measures. It's quite rare in my world. And a shared sacrifice that these alternative two offers to me is a good start, and I would look at Framework 19 as a mechanism to address the alternate issues. I think we need the time to think it through, and we can come up with a better product in through the committee work in the next year.
So you're against the motion to substitute 3 for 2, and you're in favor of 2?
I'm sitting on the fence, but...
Okay. Anyone else? Jim Aldman.
Yes, I'm opposed to substitution. I think sharing the pain has gotten us into a lot of trouble in other fisheries, and I think a more targeted alternative, which would lower us close to our target F, and I believe our target F has to be achieved over a period of time, not necessarily on any particular given year, so that I am opposed to the substitution.
Sally?
I think one of the most important things we need to listen to is that the model may be overestimating biomass. So even if we do go with alternative 3, which I support, we still may not be achieving an appropriate F rate. So I think that's something that's important to consider, that we're getting warnings that the model may not be giving us an accurate estimate of biomass.
Mike Leary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have to applaud the industry for coming forward, but I'm concerned that it's a certain segment of the industry. It seems like to me that there are multiple boat owners. We haven't actually heard from single boat owners whether or not this is feasible for them.
Dr. Pierce.
I believe that Deidre said that 30% of the scarlet biomass, exploitable biomass, is in the elephant trunk area.
That's about right.
Okay. Which is about as big as my backyard. So, I mean, we're talking about, a very significant amount of the total biomass in a very small geographic area. Therefore, it obliges me to think about that elephant trunk area and to afford as much protection as we possibly can. And not to be so focused on the open areas. In addition, I note in handout number 6 in the paragraph, the last sentence before table 1, above table 1, it says, it should also be noted there are no measures in the current plan that can directly reduce general category effort except for the total number of trips in each access area. So my interpretation of that is that any reduction in open area DA, the days at sea, would obviously not impact the general category fleet. They would be unaffected by that particular measure. So that's another reason why I tend to shy away from alternative number 3. Furthermore, with the rotational area management scheme that we have developed, that we've been working with now for a few years, we understand that it's critical for us to have great support from the industry. That's always been our way of operating, embracing their ideas, working with them. We need their assistance, and frankly, they've been quite tolerant of many of our actions that have not been that have not recognized that needed relationship with them. Therefore, because they have come forward, and it's not just the Fishery Survival Fund, but it's other groups as well, because they have come forward with a specific suggestion that is alternative number 2 with some additional strategies related to it, because they've come forward with alternative 2, I tend to favor alternative 2 as the way to proceed. It does get us it does get us closer to the 0.20 as the value of fish and mortality. And it's, again, consistent with their specific recommendations. So for those reasons, I don't support alternative 3.
What else on the council? Okay, before I call a question on the substitution, I'm going to call on the audience. Dave Frula.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. Before I get into the discussion, I think I'd like to note that the Survival Fund represents the bulk of the permit holders in the limited access fleet, so we don't just represent the fleet owners. We represent a good cross-section of all of the fleet, including some of the smaller vessel owners. We had a conference call. I probably haven't ever had a bigger one, where we had about 50 participants on the phone call discussing it. And about the argument for doing nothing that got just about the most traction of any was, well, if we go in there and offer something, they'll double it. Thank you very much. That's the substitute motion. We talk about oxes getting gored. The way to spread the sacrifice here is to apply the restrictions in the one place where everybody in the fleet can get limited, and that is in these access areas, and that's what we've proposed. There's an issue of uncertainty. How do you deal with uncertainty? How do we know we're doing enough? We haven't just offered alternative two. We've offered alternative two with two other measures. The first is to begin the access program on March 1st rather than January 1st. The reason to do that is because you'll get 2 months of additional scallop growth. You will also be able to have people fishing on the scallops when they're larger, which means that for either an 18,000-pound trip or a 400-pound trip, you'll have to kill fewer animals. That should reduce the fishing mortality rate. The January 1st date was put in there when the PDG was projecting you could take 9 trips out of there. And when you were looking at a 5 or 6 month closure for turtles that Oceana had offered up and was promoting pretty vigorously, we're now at a month and a half closure, and we're now down to somewhere between 5 and 3 trips, so the need to start in January certainly isn't as compelling, and we think that you could actually get a kind of a bounce to mitigate some of that uncertainty there if you just suspend the opening for 2 months. Also, this deck loading issue. Somehow, and this is another thing of inscrutable origin, is whether it was in the regulations or not, the fleet was operating under the premise that you couldn't leave the access area with more than 50 bushels, and that somehow that changed in Framework 18. What's happening is people are reducing their fuel costs and their time at sea by deck loading and steaming for home, and in many instances, you're ending up with people having extra scallops that they can't keep with the 18,000-pound limit and having some of those shoveled over as they're heading back to shore. That's a loss we don't need, and that's something else that ought to be able to be fixed and reduce the uncertainty. There's a lot that we can do in the industry to talk about fixing this, but this is another way through a small regulatory fix, and this is a newly discovered situation where you could make a change and, again, improve the conservation elements here. In terms of things that haven't been considered, you do have new survey information from 2006. You also have more information about recruitment. Sort of as a footnote, I'd note that where they're finding recruitment on George's Bank is the northern edge, the parts of closed area 1 that are habitat closures, and in the channel. Congratulations to us. Those are all the areas that you think you want to close for habitat. So in terms of what happens going forward, you need to think about scallop availability. There is this growing recognition of the lack of precision of projections that are coming out of these areas with dense scallops. That Hudson Canyon was example number one. They're just, in terms of the growth rates and all that, this is newly evolving information that I think would add to the basis for moving forward. And, again, I don't think that when y'all did Framework 18, maybe you did, that anybody thought that we still would be working on General Category Amendment 11. There's still no effective constraints there in the open areas. This is a way to, and that is not truly expected, I don't think, by NIMS. I think they probably figured they would have had that for 2007. We sure did. So I believe that Alternative 2 is the way to go. We'd advocate augmenting it with those two additional measures, and we thank you for your consideration.
Ron Smollett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smollett, Fishery Survival Fund. The industry learned a lot from Hudson Canyon, and I think this council needs to learn a lot from Hudson Canyon. The alternative to replace Alternative 2 is just wrong. The problem is the elephant trunk area. We've, the industry and our academic partners working along with NIMS are pretty good now in doing surveys and understanding what the biomass is in a location. What we've failed to do accurately is project into the future. And the numbers on these charts you just cannot trust. I mean, just go to the table that goes out to 2017 and tell me where 65 million pounds of scallops each year is going to come from. The projections don't work. Two problems in the elephant trunk area, out of many, is culling. The vast majority of the scallops in that area are 80 to 120 millimeters. They're doing a deck load, and they're going to cull. and that's going to cause mortality far in excess of what the model projects. The other thing we're finding is when you start going to these larger meats, remember this fishery used to depend on 30 and 40 count. Now a small scallop is a 10 to 20 count, and a lot of the times you're trying to get the U10s, U12s. What we're finding is when you shuck these larger, older meats, you tear away a piece of the meat. And a lot of times you tear so much, you have to throw the whole scallop overboard. I was in the lightship area last week. It's about a 20% loss. That's 20% that's not even in the model. So what we have to do, the problem is in the elephant trunk. That's the place that we need to cut the effort until we learn more. The open areas are more self-regulating. If there's a low catch per unit effort, they're still not going to be culling. It's going to move effort away from the high turtle areas. There's a lot of reasons not to cut the open area days and concentrate on the elephant trunk. I just think you should listen to the industry. We've come time and time again in front of this council over since 1999 making recommendations that have been ignored. It's about time that you trust that we know what we're talking about. Thank you.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall from the Beaufort Seafood Consultant. For the record, I'd like to state I've got 32 years experience scalloping. A good portion of that time was spent on deck and digging through some of these piles. And you've had some excellent advice given to you from the attorney, from someone who's been out at sea as a gear expert and who's worked with industry quite a while, and now you've got someone who figures he has a pretty good background in the scalloping fishery. I've also worked for the last 12 years trying to defend some of these issues. And today, you have the entire industry, and I'll use that somewhat loosely because there's always someone who may not agree, but the conference call that you heard reference to included over 50 people. They weren't from one area. They weren't from one sector. It went from New Bedford all the way down to the Carolinas, and I don't know how many people were in the other room. I was at the SMATS portion of the conference call, and there was probably 25, 26 people at the time of the call. Most of these people were fishermen, boat owners, captains. I think you have a few of them here today that were there. And, yes, they are individual boat owners. And we didn't really ask the pedigree of the other people other than that they were affiliated with the scallop industry, and they were making a move to do what they thought was best for the resource and for them. And for them, the best recommendation they could give was alternative two or option two, calling for three trips in the elephant trunk area with no reductions of days at sea in the open areas. Now, David Gothel mentioned before that he was concerned about it being fair and equitable to all users or all sectors. That is the only one that falls that way because it will impact each and every user group that's currently in there. If you choose option three, as he's suggesting there, then that'll impact the limited access fleet to a point where I don't think they'll be able to really get by on. And once again, we are mandated to do the best we can to make sure that it is fair and equitable. A couple of points I'd like to bring up, and they've already been mentioned, but I'd like to go over them again because this is something that's key to the industry. We really don't have an easy way to do this, unfortunately. It has to be done through an interim action. And that's always been tough, and from my understanding is the only way an interim action can be taken like this is in the case of overfishing. If we do not go into the elephant trunk area, we don't have a case of overfishing. It's that simple. So the problem obviously lies with the effort that's going to occur in the elephant trunk area. Now, perhaps if the season started in March and ended by, October, we wouldn't have that problem because then your resource is going to have a much better yield, 20, 30, 40% better. You would have to cut 20, 30, or 40% less animals to get the equivalent weights. You know, you're not only managing by TAC here. You set a goal of pounds, and then you tell us to go out and kill twice or a third or a quarter more animals to reach that level. That's where some of the problem comes in. We're looking at two different objects and trying to come up with the same goal. On one hand, we're dealing with weight, and when we deal with mortality, we're dealing with individual animals. They're not the same. Three assessments occurred down there. One used a 3.5-inch ring, one used a 3-inch ring, and one used a 4-inch ring. So obviously you're going to get differences. They all occurred at different times of the year. Once again, obviously you're going to have differences. That refers back to the yield. Two of those provide yield information. The last one has to do it through a modeling. They've worked together real hard to come up with what you have now as the best scientific information in front of you. And that's what the industry is asking you to judge it on. We were originally thought to be possibly taking 9 trips in that area, and the first thing that you heard from the industry is it's impossible to do that. In an area this small, with removal of that amount of scallops, you would have the same thing occur as it occurred in Hudson Canyon when everybody threw up their hands and said, we can't understand it. 1/3 of the resource wasn't there that we thought. Did we overestimate? No. We managed it wrong. We accessed it the wrong time of year. We forced people to take trips in there when they really shouldn't have been in there. And we're about to do the same thing again if we don't take measures to prevent that. Start of the fishing year, March 1st for the scallopers, was moved ahead to put access on January 1st because of concerns that if we did take our full complement of trips, we would run too long and possibly run into concerns with turtles. The industry realized that and didn't really oppose that issue because we felt we had to get our trips in one way or another, but knowing that January, February, and March, maybe March is starting to get better, but January and February is not the time you want to be harvesting that resource. Those meats have not come around. You've got to think of what you're going to gain for each animal you kill. We're telling you, you're not gaining what you should be. You're not getting the full value. Another issue that no one's really spoke about deals with the safety aspect. Access into that area in January for a large scallopper out of New Bedford is probably not a real big issue. We've done it years in and years out, and we'll continue to do that as long as we're capable of fishing. However, has anyone considered what it's going to mean to a 45-foot general category boat who feels he has to access that area before it's lost to him like it was lost to the limited access fleet in the Nantucket Lightship area when they couldn't get all their trips in because of yellowtail bycatch? They will go in there with them small boats, and I'm telling you, it's the wrong thing to be doing. So just as if you want to look for something that says we can prevent something like that happening, it makes sense to move it along further in the year. I pointed out the issue about the Hudson Canyon example. Probably the last thing I would mention has to do with the deck loading. Deck loading has never been a good practice, either for resource or for fishermen. The New Bedford Fishermen's Union years ago had a requirement that said you could not put more than 2 toes on deck between the gallows and the winch. Your deck area. I mean, they were very specific about it. Back in 1976, I believe it was, we lost a navigator, 13 men on board, and we all know why. She was deck loaded, she was fishing off at Chatham, and she headed for home. She went through Round Stroll, and she was never seen again. These are the things you can prevent by accepting advice from industry as to the best way that we should be fishing. Don't force us to fish against our own recommendations. That's all I can ask you. Thank you.
The gentleman in the red shirt, then Dan Cohen, Jim O'Malley, and then Vito, and then I'm going to come back to the council.
My name is Eric Hansen, and I am a single boat owner, and I support this alternative too. There was an analogy made earlier about a fire. There is no fire yet, but the match is lit. All we have to do is shake a wrist and solve the problem. Thank you.
That was quick. Dan, then Jim, then Vito.
I want to make a few points if I can relatively quickly. First, I want to say that we shouldn't all be doom and gloom. We need to do something, and I think an interim action is required, but we also can celebrate some of the good things that are happening here. You know, we are currently on a biannual spec, partly because we weren't certain how quickly we'd get information. This year we had 3 surveys done, one by the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, two cooperatively with the Science Center with VIMS and with SMAS and the industry. All three of them were done in the summer, were analyzed quickly. You had information in September, October, quick enough to act upon. That's a real success. It's a real success to be able to use that information. I think we should be looking at that in the positive manner that it is rather than the negative. Second thing I want to say is that really the signs are here that it is worse than we're saying, than the memo says. And I want to say that the signals are there. The PDT has written there. You have to interpret it to understand. And if I say something wrong, I hope DeVore will correct me. Number one is that the two things we glance at relatively quickly is that, and the memo points it out, is that the model that they're using currently is based upon a growth curve in the Georges Bank. They've been applying that in the Mid-Atlantic. But now, at a PDT meeting, DeVore presented her new data that shows that she's seeing now what fishermen in the Mid-Atlantic have been saying. Scallops in the Mid-Atlantic don't grow as large, and the meats in the shells are not as big as they are in New England. And she now is starting to see that data. She's planning to present that, I believe it says in the PDT document, in the SARC, and that might reevaluate the terms of reference. But she is still using in this the current terms of reference, which is why it is predicting more. And I'll give you some evidence to prove it in a moment here. The second thing is the yield. They've been using up till now, if I'm saying this correctly, the yield from the NIMS survey, which is done in the summer months in July. Well, this is the best yield of the year. Well, if you would take, again, the number of animals and multiply it by that yield, you're going to project a larger biomass than is actually accounted by the fleet, which is harvesting throughout the year, which we'd have to look at an average yield. And that's something, again, that the PDT and NIMS is now thinking about reconsidering. But they can't apply those terms of reference into the new SARC. So the numbers you're seeing are actually overly optimistic. Now, how can I prove that to you? Well, the one thing that Deirdre said, I'd like to underline what she said. She said that in Framework 18, we were predicting 70 million pounds of landings this year, and it looks like we're going to land 55 million. Well, that's a big under, a lot less. So, again, when we start seeing signals, we can see where the future is. And if we don't make a cutback now and husband the resource that we have in the elephant trunk, we're not going to really have anything to harvest of any amount in 2008 and 2009. And I think the cutbacks will be bigger than you even anticipated. And let me continue that for a minute, for a second. One of the things we don't have before us today, and again, he's not here, but I'm going to try to summarize something that SMAS Kevin said at the meeting the other day when we were at his office for this conference call. There, when they looked at the, and I believe you have this information, and if not, I'm sure we can get it to you. When they did their video survey, they found significant biomass in the elephant trunk area. And that biomass could, in theory, support five trips. But if you looked at that biomass, there was about enough 15 count to support three trips, and the rest was around 40 count. So we could either go in there and harvest a lot this year, including 40 count, which is really things we've been trying to avoid. Our average land meat count's probably been around, 15, 18 for the year. Or if we only take three trips and we, as an industry, fish on the larger animals because they're separated physically in the area, we would leave the smaller ones roped for another year. It would be a significant benefit. So the second thing I was trying to point out to you is that because the regional director asked, and I think it's important that she asked, and we give her those reasons, that we identify real quantifiable things that say there is a problem, that we can see that if we don't act, it will become actually compound the problem, it will be worse. And if we take action today, it will mitigate that. And I want to be clear about another thing also, though, because one of the things you're trying to do in fisheries management is to try to avoid this traditional boom-bust cycle. Well, as we know, and that's one of the things Deirdre also said, but you have to, again, interpret what she said. She said one of the mistakes the PDT said is we might have over-allocated in 2007. Well, the reality is that for a few years, the industry's had 40 to 50 days in the open areas and five closed area trips. Right now, if we don't make a change, we're allocated seven closed area trips, more than we've had for a number of years. Well, we don't need it more. I mean, obviously, we need to be conservative, so we'll have something to fish in 2008 and 2009. So I think what I wanted to do is I've done, which I've laid out for you, I think some of the rationale that's within the PDT document about the growth yield, the growth and the yield, that really point out that we're at much too much risk not to take action today, and the benefit of taking action is really manifest. And I would say in terms of there is currently a motion and potentially a substitute motion, I would hope that at the end, the final motion or actions would support an interim action to, number one, only have three trips, two, to begin the fishing year on March 1st, which, as you've heard, was a significant benefit in terms of yield. And number three, to not allow vessels to leave the area with more than 50 bushels on deck, which is a significant benefit in terms of reducing bycatch mortality. All three of those things will contribute to the out years potentially being as good as we could hope they'd be, rather than them being really poor. Thank you.
Jim O'Malley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Council members, Joy, a guy who sits here and the first thing he does is he puts a stopwatch in front of him. In agreement with the people who have spoken before me, certainly alternative number two is preferable. And I'd like to speak in more general terms for a moment after having put on the record the support for two. In the package that I handed out to the council earlier, you will find emails that I asked for last Thursday afternoon. And in three business days, emails came from people speaking for 70 boats, and not all of them by any stretch of the imagination were, quote, fleet owners, unquote. You know, some guy owns two or three boats in this day and age. I don't think that really means he's a fleet owner. The support for this is universal, cuts across part-timers and full-time small dredge, independents, so-called fleet owners, whatever. I don't think you need to worry about that political aspect of it in terms of favoring one group or another with alternative two. I think in more general terms, if the council, if by some miracle the process took 6 weeks from a vote to implementation, and the council were today to submit exactly what is in the pipeline to vote on it, I bet two things would happen. First of all, the regional administrator would vote against it because it's not precautionary enough, and I don't think that the secretary would approve it because it allows overfishing and all kinds of bad things. So then we come down to the next question. Should the secretary, through inaction, be allowed to, or should he allow something which would create a situation of overfishing and danger to vessel safety and all those other things about bycatch mortality? I would hope that Congress certainly didn't intend that national standards, particularly 1, 8, 9, 10, and 2 on best science, could be violated by an act of omission rather than an act of commission. And I certainly hope that the council agrees with that and votes for the emergency request. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to turn it back over to council discussion, and I appreciate your listening. The other two items, the March 1st and the deck loading, I think are important. And I did have a question on whether or not deck loading could be addressed by a technical amendment. And perhaps someone in the agency could address that. Otherwise, thank you very much. And I'll take my watch with me.
Vito Jay.
My name is Vito J. Calamo. I'm the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Fishery Recovery Commission. And I was here yesterday, but I didn't get a chance to speak. I want to welcome you to the Port of Gloucester, where I've lived all my life, the oldest fishing port in the country, and we thank you for being here. I want to go on record as supporting Alternative 2, and I will not repeat all the reasons that have been brought forward from the previous speakers, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to make this as short as possible. I think the best cooperative research program that I've seen in all my 62 years living in the Port of Gloucester comes out of the Port of New Bedford from SMAST, with the scallop industry working with SMAST in the community and the industry. It is by far superior than I've ever seen, even from the Port of Gloucester. Mr. Chairman, this is a time we talk about cooperative research. This is a time that things are pretty terrible in the fishing industry on the East Coast. This is a time where I look at the oldest fishing port in the community as struggling. But this is a time in New Bedford where the scallop industry has reached out to you and has made a strong suggestion on Alternative 2. This is the time, Mr. Chairman, that they've asked to join hands with the New England Fisheries Management Council and go forward, jointly. I think if you listen to all the politicians there are, and I've listened to many, as you know, and you hear people coming out of Congress and everything, I think this is a real time to save the New England Fisheries Management Council, the New England fisheries, and fisheries up and down the coast from Maine to Florida. I think this is a time, really, to look at this situation, Mr. Chairman, and go forward with an alternative that has been brought to you by industry in the best interest of the scallops. So, Mr. Chairman, I will conclude now by saying I thank you again for this opportunity to speak, and I hope you hear what I've said. Thank you.
Mr. Fletcher, then Maggie, then back to the council.
I was surprised by my membership as much as anything because I thought I knew them, and when I was asked about this proposal, I gave an opinion, but I said I'd ask my membership. To the man or to the vessel owner, every one of them supports this. Now, if you're surprised at me sitting at this table supporting it, I am too. But it shows you that throughout the scallop industry, there is support for this, and they think it's good management. So I would encourage you to support it. Thank you.
Maggie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought I could read the council votes and was pretty sure that the substitute was going to fail, and then I was going to try to speak to the main motion. But since everybody else is speaking about every possible combination of things that might come up, I wanted to make sure I didn't miss my chance to say that I agree our membership that participates in the general category scallop fishery agrees with taking action to reduce the number of trips in the elephant trunk area for the general category fleet. Alternative 2 or 3 would reduce the trips to the same amount, but I think you should support what the limited access guys want on the open area days. My question was on an interim action that the agency basically can do whatever they want, regardless of your recommendations. Is that correct?
That was on my list to mention when I get a chance to talk again.
Okay. Saving everybody some time here. I wanted to speak then to the other issues that were raised in the proposal that was forwarded by the limited access fleet and some of the general category fleet regarding the delayed opening and the deck loading. We would certainly support any measures that could prevent deck loading, but we do have a concern about the delayed opening. And I just wanted to, if that comes up, I can either speak to it now or I can, if that issue comes up, I'd like to reserve the opportunity to speak to it. But basically, it's really under the framework adjustment process that was approved, the industry could have anticipated at this point that there would be a reduction in number of trips, but there was no way to anticipate a change in the start date. And so people have made plans based on what was in Framework 18 to go into that area on January 1st. And the people that I work for would like to continue those plans to go on January 1st. So, again, if that issue comes up, I think there are possible ways that that could be constructed. Maybe the general category fleet goes first, or, I mean, I just think it wasn't anticipated, and we would have a concern about that. So I want to support the main motion, but then, you know, point out that reservation about the delayed opening. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Dave.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am always ready to support any industry-generated reduction in a fishery. And I seconded Dave Gothel's proposal to substitute because I wanted to hear the argument rather than just read it. And I heard it, and it was eloquent, and it was convincing. So I would not, at this point, support the substitute.
Anyone else? Okay. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion to substitute, raise your hand. Two. Opposed? Thirteen. Motion to substitute fails. 2-13, one abstention. Dr. Pierce.
Back to the main motion, I would move to amend to add to the end of the motion as it currently is worded the following sentences. Additionally, this interim action should, one, delay the opening of the elephant trunk area until March 1, 2007, and two, prohibit vessels fishing in the elephant trunk area from leaving that area with more than 50 bushels of unshucked scallops. And that is my motion to amend, Mr. Chairman, and I can give the logic if you care to hear it if someone seconds it.
Seconded by Dana Rice.
Okay. I need not give too much logic because it's already been stated eloquently by individuals in the audience. Clearly, it's the rationale for it has been described in the documentation that's been provided to us regarding incidental mortality in the access area fisheries from vessels taking more than the 50 bushels of in-shell scallops. Of course, the growth rate concerns, the fact that additional scallop growth and harvest will increase the meat weights significantly, so it makes a great deal of sense to go with that particular March 1st date. I do have some rationale to provide if regarding the merits of the entire motion itself, but I'll wait on that and just deal with this motion to amend.
Paul Howard.
Thought about some additional logic for emergency action for Deirdre. Those projections, those excellent projections, are based on achieving 0.20 and average recruitment, if I'm not mistaken. So we should have a little bit of talk about average recruitment. Over the last 5 years, what's the recruitment been like? And the other thing is that we had overfishing in 2003, overfishing in 2004, not in 5 and 6, and then again projected for 2007. So if we don't do anything, we will have had overfishing 3 out of the last 5 years, and we can't afford that in a fishery. So that's rationale in my mind. We can't allow 3 out of 5 years overfishing.
Jim Odlin and Jim Salisbury.
To the amended motion, the reason I originally had split that is that I had a question on whether the deck loading could actually be done in a technical amendment, and I think Deirdre could explain it to me whether that actually was an oversight when we put in Framework 18, because it wasn't allowed, and then it was allowed, and I don't think there was much discussion on it. It just kind of happened and fell through the cracks. So that was the reason, the rationale of splitting it, to see if and we might get one of them under a technical amendment and not have to ask for an emergency on that.
Yeah, I'll probably defer to Pete on this, but there has been a lot of confusion about that. I believe it was in the proposed rule. Nobody commented on it / noticed it. So that's been some of the discussion at the PDT level anyway about the deck loading provision, but Pete may want to add to that.
The elimination of the deck loading was actually removed under Amendment 10 final rule because one of the main reasons was prior to Amendment 10, there was a days at sea trade-off where vessels would, they didn't have a possession limit. They were subject to days at sea accounting in each access area. So it wasn't Framework 18. It was all the way back from Amendment 10 where that was eliminated. So it had actually been in 3 proposed and final rules since that time.
Jim Salisbury.
To the maker of the motion, why did you limit the deck loading prohibition to just the elephant trunk area instead of any access area?
I limited it to that particular area because of the smallness of the scallops that are in the area. 30% of the biomass is in that area, and that's what the recommendation was from the industry. That's what they brought forward, specific to the elephant trunk area.
May I follow through? As I read it, their recommendation is leaving any access area. And so I would wonder if it's a friendly amendment, whether the maker would make that, just prohibit vessels fishing in an access area from leaving that area with more than 50 bushels.
Yeah, I agree. I misread it. That's a very good suggested change, and I will accept that.
It's okay by the maker and the seconder to... apply the prohibition to all access areas. Captain McPherson.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, the Coast Guard does have some safety concerns for the 1 January opening, and it does appear that regardless of really how many, what the number of scallops out there, it does appear that there's going to be a large number of large and small vessels heading out there in a fairly confined area at that time of year, and we just think weather's going to be a detrimental factor.
Thank you for that. Anyone else on the council on the motion to amend the main motion? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? 14. Abstentions? 1 abstention. The motion carries. Now on the main motion. David.
Well, simply put, regarding additional rationale for this particular action, I will once again reference document number 2 that was the scenario binder. We've gone over it. I won't go over it again. Plan development team has given us many good reasons to be concerned that we have overestimated biomass. They've indicated in their last paragraph that serious precautions should be taken not to overestimate the exploitable biomass in the elephant trunk area, and they believe that we have. If we have indeed overestimated the biomass in the elephant trunk area, that would mean the fish and mortality rate would be much higher than expected. And that's just not acceptable. And the executive director, Paul, noted that a little earlier on regarding overfishing. So I think the case has been clearly made for actions to be taken sooner than later. And I would urge, of course, the council to adopt this motion and for the National Marine Fisheries Service to very seriously entertain it.
Anyone else? Pat?
Thanks. A few things, and Maggie knocked one off my list. First, one of the people have talked about some of the reasons how we got into this situation. I think one that has not been raised yet has to do with the issue of the timing between the fishing year and the survey, and the disconnect there. There's been very little support in the past for consideration of changing the fishing year. So that we're not in this kind of situation. It's again going to be before the council in Amendment 11, and I would hope that we would all look more carefully at that so that we don't end up in this situation in the future, because we can't manage this fishery by interim and emergency action. If in fact we did agree that an interim action was called for, I just want to point out, as I always do to the council, that that will divert our resources from the other scallop actions that are going on and to this action instead, and may in fact delay some of the other scallop actions as a result. And finally, I want to remind everyone that I always vote no on emergency actions to preserve the Secretary's discretion. So it's not an indication of emergency or interim actions, I should say. Not an indication of the agency's position on it. It's a procedural thing.
Okay, thanks, Pat. Rip?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we have had a great deal of good discussion on this issue, and therefore I will move the question.
I'll call the question. Can we put it up on the board, please? The motion, the main motion. All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen. Opposed? One. Abstentions? None. Motion carries. You're all set, Deirdre. Dave, do you have anything else under scallops? Nope. Jim Kendall.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. Let me come up on this. I hope at some point in time that a technical adjustment can be made to the reference to bushels. No one uses bushels anymore. I've raised this issue since we started dealing with quantities that deal in bushels. It's basically a plastic basket. I had already supplied the volumetric references. It would make it impossible for enforcement to come up with a figure, because there are no bushel baskets to use. It's the plastic basket. So it's just something that needs to be addressed. And I know we keep putting it off, and we haven't had a problem, but that's because they've been able to work with it. At some point in time, it may not happen that way. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. We're butting up against the 90 minutes again. We're going to take a five-minute break, and when we come back, we have one last item on the agenda.
From some of the hearing committee members to put together a list of research priorities, and you have